tumble out of bed and stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping out on the streets. The traffic starts jumping for folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taken and no given. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5 is next on Fanacek. Okay, this is S2E10. This is the season finale of Fanacek, part one. This is going to be a two-part episode, a cliffhanger. Not because I had something exciting, I simply just had too much to get to. So we will be talking about 9 to 5 today, the 1980 classic movie, turned into a kind of forgettable TV show, but it's got an interesting story. However, before that, I thought I would address something. So I think I mentioned in an email last episode, I thought I'd talk about a Facebook hate I was getting lately. So some people reached out to me on Facebook, two people specifically, not going to mention their names. But so I've talked a lot on the podcast about the NBC Sunday Night Mysteries, the things like McMillan and Wife and Columbo and McLeod and all that. And I have never mentioned the show Heck Ramsey. So two different people on Facebook reached out to me like, why don't you ever mention Heck Ramsey? Well, quite frankly, people, I didn't know about it. So remember, I'm not a professional. I'm just a fan, but I did not know Heck Ramsey. So what I thought I would do is A, apologize, and B, we'll talk a little bit about Heck Ramsey today. So, again, you had the weekly NBC Sunday Night Mystery Murder movies that came out. Again, Columbo's like my favorite one. Is a rotating series of shows. Some were successful, some weren't. You know, Columbo being arguably the most successful out of that group. But Heck Ramsey was in there, so I'll go ahead and read about it. It ran from 1972 to 1974. I never heard about it. It only lasted 10 episodes. Maybe that's why I never heard about it. Here is the synopsis. The Adventures of Heck Ramsey, a turn of the 20th century detective who prefers to use his brains instead of his guns. That's a common theme for all these shows. You don't see a lot of violence in these mystery shows, which is great. I hope you are satisfied. I went ahead and I had seen on Facebook that someone posted the intro to the NBC Sunday Night Murder Mysteries with the music by Henry Mancini. It's a really cool intro. I went ahead and shared it on my page so you can look it up on Real Fanacek. I posted it there. It's pretty cool stuff. But again, I do apologize. That's Heck Ramsey. And now I know. And knowing is half the battle, according to G.I. Joe. So today we are talking about the 1980 classic 9 to 5. The movie starred Jane Fonda, Dolly Parton, and Lily Tomlin as like the three co-workers who take down their horrible boss, played by Dabney Coleman. Let me read you the synopsis of the film just to make it official. Three female employees of a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot find a way to turn the tables on him. I loved this movie as a kid, and I don't know why. It's not really appropriate, but for whatever reason, it was definitely a part of my world when I was little. Saw it a bunch. It was directed by Colin Higgins. He directed The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, also a Dolly Parton movie. He also directed Foul Play, the movie with Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn, which I talked about earlier this season because it was turned into a short-lived television show. He wrote Harold and Maude. He wrote Silver Streak, Foul Play, 9 to 5, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. So he's a pretty prolific guy, so I thought I would talk about him. The movie was a smash. It grossed almost $104 million. That's in 1980 money. That's a lot. It turned Dolly Parton into a mainstream movie star. She was a country star. She was big in that world. And she was kind of a pop culture figure, but this made her a mainstream movie star. And I remember even as a little kid, I mean, Dolly Parton was huge. And talk about, boy, she's had a good run. I mean, she's more important now than I think she's ever been before. My wife said this in passing a couple weeks ago, and it's true. A lot of people are going to be crushed when she passes away. Like, she's really important to people. She's a great lady. You know, I live here in Tennessee, so kind of not too far. Well, I'm a few hours away from Dollywood. You know, she's got that, I don't know what it's called, but she's got a program where if you have children, you can receive free books every month for your kids. And we used to get them all the time. And they're all about, you know, building self-esteem and your self-worth. And she's a great lady. She's part of a lot of great things. Of course, the movie 9 to 5 had the hit song, Working 9 to 5, also sung by Dolly Parton. It also spawned a Broadway musical and a TV show that aired on ABC from March of 1982 to October of 1983 before going to its first run syndication, which I will teach you about, from September of 1986 to March of 1988 for a total of 85 episodes. Okay, so there's a lot going on with this show. I thought this was going to be an easy episode. Like, hey, 9 to 5, I like the movie. Let's talk about the show. Both of them have good casts. It's not that simple, kiddos. We got to break this thing down. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of changes throughout the run of this show. So first, let me break it down by season. Season 1, it premiered on ABC on March 25th, 1982. The leads were as follows. Valerie Curtin played Judy Burnley, who was played by Jane Fonda in the movie. And I'll recap all this later. Rita Moreno played Violet Newstead, who later became Violet Fernandez, who was played by Lily Tomlin in the movie. Rachel Dennison played Dora Lee Rhodes, who was played by Dolly Parton in the movie. And by the way, Rachel Dennison's name changes later, but that's a surprise, so I'll bring it up later. Then Jeffrey Tambor starred as Franklin Hart, their boss, who in the movie was Dabney Coleman. The season lasted 4 episodes. I'm guessing it was a mid-season replacement, something like that. I don't know. But then season 2 premiered. It's still on ABC at this point. It premiered on September 28th, 1982. Jeffrey Tambor as Franklin Hart was replaced by Peter Bonners? I mean, I've seen the name a million times. I'm sure it's pronounced Bonners, but you know what? We're going to call it Bonners, kiddos. Boner with a Z. Oh, that should be the name of a book. I know that album, Liza with a Z. Boner with a Z. Anyway, so Jeffrey Tambor is out. Peter Bonners is in. And now at some point, Rachel Dennison, who played Dolly's role of Dora Lee, went from being Rachel Dennison to Rachel Parton George. Yes, because she's Dolly's little sister in real life. So how about that? And we're going to discuss that in a bit. Okay, more changes to come. Also in season 2, Herb Edelman joined the cast. He was, for those of you who don't know, I'm sure he's done a bunch of stuff, but most of us know him as Dorothy's ex-husband on The Golden Girls. He was Stan Zbornak. I saw him once in Port Hueneme, California. So look that place up. I was at a Ralph's, which is the California equivalent of Kroger. I was at a Ralph's grocery store in Port Hueneme, and I saw Stan Zbornak, who I guess in real life his name is Herb Edelman. Anyway, and he's big. Dude had to be like 6'5". Anyway, actually, throughout the run, though, there were tons of changes with the supporting cast, but I want to focus on the main players. But the supporting cast changed a lot. So far at this point, the show is a hit. It's in the top 15 in the ratings. Now, it's out of like 76 shows, right? It's in the top 15. It's a hit show, but then season 3 happens. So season 3 premieres still on ABC. That's important. It premiered on September 29th, 1983. Up until now, Jane Fonda had been an executive producer. Prior to season 3, she does not like the direction of the show, so she walks. So this guy named James Comack steps in, he takes over the show, and he has a much different vision for it. So even more changes to come. First, the character of Judy Burnley, again, played by Jane Fonda in the movie and portrayed by Valerie Curtin on the TV show until now, well, she was written off the show so that they could add a younger, sexier character of Linda Bowman, who was portrayed by Leah Ayers. They also added a kid and a few new co-workers and all that shit. Okay, so also by this time, Valerie Newstead, who was played by, I know this is confusing, the character Valerie Newstead, who at this point is played by Rita Moreno, became Valerie Fernandez because she's being played by Rita Moreno. So no longer Violet Newstead, now it's Violet Fernandez. That happens somewhere in the mix. Okay, more changes. I hope you're following. So these changes caused an instant decline in the ratings, and the show dropped from number 15 out of 76 to number 75 out of 76. How about that? And it got canned. And that was that. Wiping our hands of it. Or was it? Because in the fall of 1986, the show resurfaced due to the magic of first run syndication. So I'm going to educate you now on syndication. So syndication is typically, when you think of syndication, it's typically really, you're thinking of second run syndication, which is reruns, right? And that's where the real money's made. So for example, you have a show like Seinfeld. Once Seinfeld hits 100 episodes, which is typically in season 5, right? Once it hits 100 episodes, you can now sell it into syndication so other channels can show it, TBS, TNT, HBO, Netflix, whomever. And that's where you make all the millions and millions and millions of dollars. So when you have a TV show, kiddos, what you're trying to get to is 100 episodes, because then you can sell it into syndication. But technically, that's second run syndication. What first run syndication is, and which is what this show did, is when basically an independent distributor decides to create the show, they own the show, and then they're going to sell it to individual markets who want to air it. I'll give you some examples of shows that were not network shows or didn't have backing of a network, they were private. Great example is Baywatch. So Baywatch years ago actually premiered on NBC and it got canceled. David Hasselhoff, though, believed in the show. He got people to finance it, and then went into syndication where he owned the show. He sold it to whomever. So maybe if you live in Texas, TBS is showing it. If you live in Utah, CBS is showing it. Who knows, right? But it's individually owned. It's independently owned, and that makes a lot of money. A lot of people don't know this, but David Hasselhoff became a very wealthy man because of Baywatch. That was first-run syndication. Another example of first-run syndication, Arsenio Hall. So, you know, Jay Leno had his show, The Tonight Show, right? That's on NBC. Conan's on NBC. David Letterman was on CBS, right? And I'm sure there's a show on ABC. Who the hell knows? There's so many of these fucking shows. Arsenio, not that way. Arsenio was privately owned, right? Someone owned that show. They financially backed it. They went into the individual markets and sold it. So Arsenio was a first-run syndicated show. So that's syndication, second-run syndication versus first-run syndication. Anyway, so ABC had gotten rid of 9 to 5. But clearly someone believed in it because they went ahead, they scooped it up, they got it financially backed, and they went to individual markets and sold it. So in the fall of 1986, the show resurfaces in the form of syndication. Okay, Valerie Curtin came back. So remember, she was the one that guy got rid of because he wanted a younger character. Well, now they brought the character back. They brought Valerie Curtin back. So did Rachel Parton George. She came back. However, in those couple years where the show was gone, Rita Moreno was no longer available. So they created another character, Marcia McMurray, and she was played by Sally Struthers. How about that? That's really cool. Sally Struthers, of course, was Gloria Stivick on All in the Family. I like Sally Struthers. She had a really good run in the 70s and then the 80s. She was All in the Family. Then she had her own spinoff show, which I believe is called Gloria, where her and Michael got a meathead, right? They got divorced. It's kind of dark. But then in the 80s, man, she kind of gained a lot of weight. And I hate to say it, but that became what she was more known for, was the weight gain. She also raised a lot of money for charity. She was a lady on TV always saying, for the price of a cup of coffee, you know, raising money for Africa and all that. But she had a little bit of a run in this show. So back to 9 to 5. They also changed the work locale and they worked for a different company. So that was one of the changes. Then they got rid of Franklin Hart altogether and added several new men for the ladies to work for. The final episode, though, just aired March 26, 1988. And then we were, in fact, done with 9 to 5 forever. So rest in peace, 9 to 5. So let me recap the OG characters. Judy Burnley, the character of Judy Burnley in the movie, played by Jane Fonda, on the TV show, played by Valerie Curtin. Violet Newstead in the movie was played by Lily Tomlin. In the TV show, Violet Newstead eventually became Violet Fernandez. She was played by Rita Moreno. Doralee Rhodes was played by Dolly Parton in the movie. And then later on by Rachel Dennison, who became Rachel Parton Rhodes in the TV show. And then Franklin Hart was played by Dabney Coleman in the movie. He later on was in the TV show, was played by Jeffrey Tambor, and then was replaced with Peter Boners. Okay, that's a lot. I hope you kids follow that. There will be a quiz later on. I'm tired. Vaynerchuk takes a lot out of me. I wish I had a commercial break, but I don't, alas. So let's start, though, with our first character. We're going to start with the character of Judy Burnley in the movie, played by Jane Fonda, in the TV show, played by Valerie Curtin. Now, we know Jane Fonda. I don't have to recap Jane Fonda, right? But let's take a gander, if you will, at Valerie Curtin. Born March 31st, 1941. First of all, she's Jane Curtin's cousin. That's really cool. Jane Curtin, an original cast member of Saturday Night Live, then went on to have a really successful career after that. She was the star of Kate and Ally with Susan St. James. She's been on other sitcoms and her Third Rock from the Sun. She's done some good movie stuff. Just an all-around successful lady. Valerie Curtin was also married for 7 years from 1975 to 1982 to Barry Levinson. How cool is that? That dude's a legend, right? He directed Diner, which was a 1982 classic movie. If you have not seen Diner, especially if you're a young man, anywhere between the ages of 20 and 40, go see Diner. Please rent Diner or Video On Demand or what the kiddos do. Go to a video store. Go watch Diner. It's a great movie. Anyway, Barry Levinson also directed The Natural, Good Morning Vietnam, Rain Man, Avalon, Bugsy, Toy. That was a movie with Robin Williams. Jimmy Hollywood. Yikes. That was a really bad comedy with Joe Pesci. Not good. Disclosure, he directed Sleepers, Wag the Dog, Sphere, Bandits, Man of the Year, another movie with Robin Williams, and What Just Happened. By the way, I read the book What Just Happened. So What Just Happened is a fun book about Hollywood. It was written by producer Art Linson. I'll tell a quick story from it. So, and then they made it into a movie, by the way, starring Robert De Niro, directed by Barry Levinson. That's why we're talking about Barry Levinson. But What Just Happened was a book by producer Art Linson. He produced a lot of hit movies, but he told one funny story. So one of the movies he produced was a movie called The Edge, which is a really cool movie. It's Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins, and actually Elle McPherson in a small role, and she's smoking hot. But long story short, you know, Anthony Hopkins is this older, you know, billionaire, basically. And his wife is Elle McPherson, a young hot model, and she's being photographed out in the Arctic wilderness, like in Alaska, by a young photographer, Alec Baldwin. It turns out Alec Baldwin and the wife had been having an affair, and Alec Baldwin plans on killing her husband, Anthony Hopkins. They get into a plane crash, long story short, they're now relying on each other to survive. They're in the Arctic wilderness here in Alaska, trying to survive. That's the gist of the movie, and it's a weird dynamic of, I know you were trying to kill me, but now we need each other to survive, yada, yada, yada. Great movie, go see it. It's called The Edge. Okay, fun story about that. So they show up in Alaska to film, wherever the hell they were filming. I think it was Alaska, but it might have been Canada. I don't know. They show up for filming, and Alec Baldwin has a beard. And like, hey, we need you to lose the beard. This character is a young, handsome photographer. The beard makes you look older. We got to lose the beard. And Alec Baldwin fights it. And he's yelling at this guy, Art Linson, who wrote the book. Fuck you. I don't listen to producers. I'm an artist. You have no respect for art. Yada, 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 yada. And they go back and forth. And finally, it's an ultimatum. They basically put the contract in front of him and say, hey, if you don't do what we say, it's breach of contract, and we're going to sue you. So Alec Baldwin reluctantly shaves the beard. You know, I made an artistic choice, and you guys are fucking me. Da, 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 da. Turns out the whole time that was all bullshit. Later on, it was revealed that Alec Baldwin had gained weight, and he felt like the beard made his chin look thinner. So that's Alec Baldwin for you. And now he's going to be on trial for manslaughter, apparently, for shooting that lady, which I don't know how that's fair. I mean, anyway, that's neither here nor there. But that's Valerie Curtin. One more thing about Valerie Curtin before we dive into her credits is she was actually in the original pilot. She was one of the two female roommates in Three's Company. So the original pilot for Three's Company was John Ritter, but two different ladies, and they all had different names. Like, I know his name wasn't Jack Tripper. I think his name was David, if I'm not mistaken. But you can YouTube it. It's got a whole opening credit scene. It's all funny with two different people. One of the ladies in that show was Valerie Curtin. And by the way, that pilot for Three's Company, it's going to come back later, kiddos, because Fanacek brings it all together. I feel like I've been talking a lot, so let's dive into Valerie Curtin's credits. Back to Ms. Valerie Curtin. She is an Oscar-nominated writer. She and her then-husband, Barry Levinson, who I mentioned, they co-wrote And Justice for All, which starred Al Pacino, and they got a Best Original Screenplay nomination for that. And Justice for All is a great movie. I think I mentioned it in an episode before. That's the movie where everyone famously does the Al Pacino impersonation. You're out of order! He's out of order! This whole courtroom's out of order! It's from that movie, And Justice for All. They also co-wrote the movie Best Friends with Burt Reynolds and Goldie Hawn. And apparently it's kind of semi-autobiographical, Valerie Curtin and Barry Levinson, when they wrote it. But she's got some killer credits. So let's take a look at her killer credits, right? She's got 38 acting credits. The first one is a 1974 episode of The New Dick Van Dyke Show. I didn't know there was a new Dick Van Dyke show. We're going to learn about it. Her last acting credit is a 2006 episode of Out of Practice, and we're going to talk about that too. Let's start with the new Dick Van Dyke show. I'm going to pull up my trusty phone here, so I have my app. Excuse me. The show, the new Dick Van Dyke show, ran from 1971 to 1974. It lasted 72 episodes. CBS basically had really wanted to do another show with Dick Van Dyke because, of course, he had the original Dick Van Dyke show. They even agreed to film it in Arizona because that's where Dick Van Dyke was living at the time. So the show was filmed and took place in Arizona. Legend Carl Reiner wrote and directed a good chunk of it. You got to remember, they worked together on the original, right? The OG Dick Van Dyke show. So Carl Reiner's back. Dick Van Dyke is back. I'll read the synopsis. Dick Van Dyke and Hope Lang play modern married couple Dick and Jenny Preston, who have comic misadventures raising their teenage daughters. That's the new Dick Van Dyke show. It did well, 72 episodes. You know, you never hear a single bad thing about Dick Van Dyke. He's still alive. He's still working. You also never heard a bad thing about Carl Reiner, who lived well into his 90s. He actually passed away back in 2020, but I don't know, just two good people doing some good work. So that's that show. Again, starred Dick Van Dyke. It starred Hope Lang. She had done 50 episodes prior to this of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. She was in Death Wish, a ton of other stuff. The show also featured Marty Brill, Dick Van Dyke, Dick Van Patten, It did, of course, have Dick Van Dyke. It had Dick Van Patten. He was the dad from Eight Is Enough. It had Barry Van Dyke, who is Dick Van Dyke's son. Richard Dawson, Cheetah Rivera, Gordon Jump. He's the one who tried to rape Dudley in Different Strokes. He was in this. Jerry Van Dyke was in this. You know, Dick Van Dyke's little brother, Jerry Van Dyke, who really came into his own later on in the show Coach. He played Luther. I think he won several awards for playing Luther. Of course, Jerry Van Dyke is long since passed away. That's Valerie Curtin's first credit. Her last credit was an episode of Out of Practice, which I didn't remember, but it's really worth talking about. So let's take a look at Out of Practice. Let me pull it up here. It was a sitcom. It ran from 2005 to 2006. It lasted, let's see here, 22 episodes, so not very long. A therapist named Benjamin Barnes lives his life in the shadows of his brother, sister, mother, and father, all of whom are doctors, while at the same time trying to keep his family together after the addition of his father's new and much younger girlfriend. Ooh. Let's see here. That's the synopsis. The show starred Ty Burrell. We know him as Phil Dunphy on Modern Family. The show also featured Henry Winkler, Stockard Channing. Stockard Channing was Rizzo in the movie Grease. Jennifer Tilly. She's done a ton of stuff, but she's probably lately most famous as being Chucky's wife or baby mama. I don't know if they ever got married. Oh, they did, because it's Bride of Chucky. Of course, he made an honest woman of her. The show also featured Constance Zimmer, Barry Bostwick, and that is Out of Practice. Oh, actually, it's not, because other notable... it is. That's Out of Practice. I'm done. Other notable roles now for Valerie Curtin. Let's start the list. She did a lot. Happy Days. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, Barney Miller, All the President's Men. God, that's a good movie, All the President's Men. That's about Woodward and Bernstein, the takedown of Watergate. What a great movie. Dustin Hoffman, Richard, Robert Redford. Go rent it. It's amazing. She was also in Mel Brooks' silent movie, Welcome Back, Cotter. Let's talk about Welcome Back, Cotter. I used to love Welcome Back, Cotter when I was a kid. So it really reminds me of that 70s New York, which I have a little bit of a memory of. And I just remember being in my grandmother's like green living room with her green couch and green carpet, the 70s style, watching Welcome Back, Cotter. Funny story about that. So I was reading a book once called Live from New York. It's probably one of the best SNL books out there. If you really want the history of SNL, go get Live from New York. And Lorne Michaels is telling a story from in the 90s. After Pulp Fiction became a huge hit, John Travolta came and hosted SNL. And one of the traditions at SNL is one of those nights in the first week, Lorne takes the host out to dinner and a few cast members get selected to be invited. It's like considered a big deal to be invited to that dinner with Lorne and the guest host. So they take Travolta out to dinner and he's trying to tell us this whole story about how in the 70s, he really felt like, you know, Welcome Back, Cotter was like the sister show to SNL and how they had like this bond and, you know, Welcome Back, Cotter and Saturday Night Live, they were like had the same spirit and all that. Tells the whole story. After dinner, Lorne Michaels leans over to somebody and says, well, you know, I was glad to hear that we were the sister show to Welcome Back, Cotter. So I guess he didn't like that very much. But anyway, that's Welcome Back, Cotter. A great show. It was Gabe Kaplan's show. He was a stand-up comedian. He played the teacher teaching the sweat hogs. And the main sweat hog was, of course, John Travolta. Back to Valerie Curtin. She was in Silver Streak, Three's Company, Rhoda. Love Rhoda. The Rockford Files. I love the Rockford Files. Now things get weird for a while, so she goes through a weird phase, but she bounces back in 1986 when she does the movie Down and Out in Beverly Hills. Boy, I hadn't thought about that movie in forever. I'm going to read you a synopsis. I really remember liking that movie a lot. A rich but troubled family find their lives altered by the arrival of a vagrant who tries to drown himself in their swimming pool. That vagrant was played by Nick Nolte. The couple was was Bette Midler and Richard Dreyfuss. Little Richard was in the movie. Tracy Nelson, she's the granddaughter of Ozzie Nelson and daughter of Ricky Nelson. But just a great movie, man, Down and Out Beverly Hills. Also in 1986, Valerie Curtin does the movie Big Trouble. I remember this movie as well. Let's read about Big Trouble. An insurance agent plots with client to kill her nutty husband. Great cast. Peter Falk is in it. He's Columbo. I love him. Alan Arkin is in it. Alan Arkin, he's a 2-time Oscar winner. He's from Second City. Look him up. Beverly D'Angelo is in this. Charles Durning, Robert Stack, Paul Dooley. Who else? Anyone else? What a great cast. Ooh, Mary Edith Burrell. I talked about her in the last episode of Fanacheck. But that is Big Trouble. Worth watching. I remember liking that movie as well. So it was directed by John Cassavetes. Great cast, like I said. Back to Valerie Curtin. 9 to 5, Frasier, Party of Five, Becker, The District. That was that show with Craig T. Nelson. Just Shoot Me. That was a great show too. George Segal, David Spade. I like that show. ER. And that is that for her notable roles. Valerie Curtin has some good notable roles. Let's dig into some more interesting roles. So in 1976, Valerie Curtin does a film called Mother, Jugs, and Speed. First of all, great title, really good poster. Look it up, Mother Jugs and Speed. It just has like a really cool poster to it. Competition between privately owned Los Angeles, California ambulance companies is played for humor. Check out this cast, man. Bill Cosby, Raquel Welch, Harvey Keitel is in this. Larry Hagman, LQ Jones, Dick Butkus, he's a Chicago Bear. Tony Basil's in this. Tony Basil was, she had a pop career in the 80s. Oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Mickey. That's Tony Basil. She was in this movie. But anyway, just a fun movie with a great poster. Then in 1977, she did another fun movie with a great poster. It's called The Great Smoky Roadblock. Another, again, killer poster. Here's the synopsis for The Great Smoky Roadblock. This movie is about an aging trucker named Elegant John Howard. Howard decides he and his truck, Eleanor, have one more good run in them. And with the help of a hitchhiker and a few others, he will make it happen. And that hitchhiker is played by none other than Henry Fonda. Love that. Great poster. Great cast. Henry Fonda. Robert Englund is in this. He was later on Freddy Krueger. Susan Sarandon. Early Susan Sarandon movie. Melanie Mayron. She was in 30-something. Lyman Ward was in this. Lyman Ward, handsome guy. You probably know him as Ferris Bueller's dad. Tony Cacciatti is in this. Tony Cacciatti was married to Valerie Harper. And I know that because they had a daughter named Christy Cacciatti, who I talked about, who I didn't like a whole hell of a lot. I knew her back in the Second City days. So there you go. If you meet her, don't tell her. All right, back to Valerie Curtin. She did a 1978 film, A Different Story. Why did I want to talk about this? I don't know. So let's read the... Oh, here's why. Let's read the synopsis. A homosexual woman marries a gay male friend to prevent his deportation, but they soon fall in love. So a lesbian woman falls in love with a gay man. The movie star Perry King and Meg Foster, they were the leads. Meg Foster... She's a staple of horror movies. She's in a lot of bad horror movies. That's what I know her. The movie also featured Richard Bull. He was... it was killing me. I was looking at his picture, Richard Bull. Then I remember who he is. He was Mr. Olson in Little House on the Prairie. He was the one, he was Nellie Olson's dad. You remember? So they owned the mercantile store. His wife was a major pain in the ass. His daughter Nellie was a major pain in the ass, but he was a really nice man. Anyway, that's how I remember him. So, but we need to move on. We need to talk about the 1978 movie Rabbit Test. Okay, let me talk to you about this. There's a lot going on here. So Rabbit Test, 1978. Lionel's life turns around after a one-night stand on top of a pinball table, and he becomes the world's first pregnant man. I didn't make that up. And that pregnant man, Lionel, was played by Billy Crystal in his film debut. Now, this movie was written and directed by Joan Rivers. It's her only time she ever directed. This is her first and only directing film here. I like Joan Rivers. I'm a fan of hers. I will say that. Here's what I'll say about Joan Rivers. She died at 83 years old, and a lot of people felt it was too soon. So there you go. She was a great stand-up. She probably doesn't get enough credit for being as good as she was. But this movie, I don't know about it. I've never seen it. But again, starred Billy Crystal in his film debut. It also featured a killer cast. I'm going to go through all of it with you. Alex Rocco was in it. He was a legend. Alex Rocco was he was Mo Green in The Godfather. Remember the guy they shot in the eye at the very end of Godfather? You know, he owned the Vegas casino there. This movie had Doris Roberts, Billy Barty. He's probably the most famous little person actor of all time. Against maybe Hervé Villechaize, I guess. But Billy Barty, big deal. ironic, he was a big deal, but he was a little person. Imogene Coca was in this. Early television actress. A comedy legend, Imogene Coca. We probably most know her as Aunt Edna in National Lampoon's Vacation. She's the aunt who died, and they strapped her to the top of the station wagon. The movie also featured Norman Fell, Alice Ghostly, Rosie Greer, Michael Keaton in his film debut. Paul Lynde, he was, you know, a confirmed bachelor, if you will, right? That's back when they called gay people confirmed bachelors. He was most famous really for being in Hollywood Squares. Movie had Roddy McDowall, Tom Poston, who were both friends and co-stars of Bill Windham. And I did a whole episode about Bill Windham. We'll look it up. This movie had Charlotte Ray. She was Mrs. Garrett. Ron Rifkin. Suzanne Zenor. So Suzanne Zenor, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing wrong. Suzanne Zenor, though, was the other girl in the Three's Company pilot. I told you I'd bring it back. So that's her. So her and Valerie Curtin, I guess, got to work together again after both getting cut from the Three's Company pilot and replaced with Joyce DeWitt, who played Janet, and lights out Suzanne Somers as Chrissy Snow. I was told, though, for a Rabbit Test, not told, I made the note in Rabbit Test to read the first review. I don't often read reviews, but now I've been reading them a lot. Okay, Let's take a look here. Similar to Airplane, Naked Gun, etc. Jokes, 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 no story. I hated all those films, but if you like them, this should be of interest because it predated Airplane and really deserves a credit for the genre, not Airplane. Main drawback is the pregnant man's story. Arnold couldn't make it work either. That's right. There was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where he played a pregnant man. I forgot about that. And then it goes on and on there. But according to this person, Joan Rivers created this genre of film. I don't know if that's true, but I thought it was worth talking about. One more interesting role for Valerie Curtin before we move on. Valerie Curtin did an episode of the TV show Baby Bob. And Baby Bob was a shitfest of a TV show. It ran 2002 to 2003, lasted 14 episodes. That's 14 too many. Although only 9 of those 14 actually aired, that's 9 too many. Let me read you the synopsis. A married couple is shocked when they realize that they must deal with the fact that their 6-month-old baby son can talk. So it's kind of like, you know, Look Who's Talking, except the adults can hear the baby talking. I don't know. Pretty stupid. It's a Look Who's Talking ripoff. I was told to read the quotes, though, because I made a note to read the quotes because it shows you how shitty the writing was. So here's some quotes from the show. These are actual lines from the show. Baby Bob. Sometimes I forget I have ears, and then my hand goes up there, and I'm like, hey, what are those? Yeah, I'll give you another example. Again, this is a line from Baby Bob. I had a bad dream where the wheels fell off the bus and they ran over Bert and Ernie. And Bert got hurt so bad, his eyebrows fell off. Some guy actually fucking wrote that. You should be shot. Anyway, let's take a look here. The cast was Adam Arkin. So that's the son of Alan Arkin. So I mentioned Alan Arkin earlier. He was an Oscar winner, 2-time Oscar winner. He's from Second City, which I take a lot of pride in. You probably most know him from his second Oscar win, which was he was the grandfather addicted to drugs in... Little Miss Sunshine, I think it was. Yeah, Little Miss Sunshine. So he won an Oscar for that. His son, Adam Arkin, hasn't had as big a career. I know him mainly from Halloween H2O. He was Jamie Lee Curtis's love interest in that. I really don't know what else he's done. But back to this movie or show, Baby Bob, Adam Arkin, Jolie Fisher, Holland Taylor. She's the mom in 2.5 Men. Elliot Gould, Ken Hudson Campbell was the voice of the baby. He's a very recognizable guy. He was in Armageddon. He was the big white guy kind of opposite the big black guy. I don't remember that big black guy. Michael Clark Duncan, I think his name was. Well, this was the white version of that in Armageddon. He was also Santa in Home Alone. For all you Home Alone fans, he was the Santa that Kevin went and saw and talked to, and the Santa gave him some Tic Tacs or something like that. But anyway, that is Valerie Curtin. So I have to do it, even though it's never a fair fight. Jane Fonda versus Valerie Curtin. I mean, we got to give it to Jane Curtin, right? But it was a good fight. Let's move on to our next character, if you will. Let's talk about Violet Newstead. So in the movie, that's played by Lily Tomlin. She's had a great career. She's still going strong and still working a lot with Jane Fonda, right? They got TV shows together, a new movie that just came out together, which we'll talk about. So she's a legend. On TV, Violet Newstead became Violet Fernandez because she's portrayed by Rita Moreno, another legend, right? So she's come up before on the podcast. She's an Oscar winner for West Side Story, which we discussed in season one during the George Chakiris episode, because he too was in West Side Story. Rita Moreno is like kind of bordering legend status, right? She's close. She's up there. I made a note to go to her trivia and read. What did I want to read in her memoir? Let's take a look here. Let's scroll to her trivia section. Made a note because there's something that jumped out of me. Okay, in her memoir, she describes how stunned she was when a handsome stranger with his wife on his arm very brazenly flirted with her. It was the 1950s and the man was then Senator John F. Kennedy. Moreno also described her disappointment about one-time lover Elvis Presley being much more like a baby brother than a stud. So that's pretty legendary shit, man. So hit on by JFK. Clearly she banged and was not impressed with Elvis. So that's kind of cool. She was born December 11th, 1931. She's 92 years old and she's still working. She's got 170 acting credits. That's a lot. Her first was a 1950 film, So Young, So Bad. Most recent was a 2023 episode of Lopez versus Lopez. Let's dive into So Young, So Bad. Again, a 1950 movie. A psychiatrist and nurse overthrow the abusive heads of a girls' reform school in order to teach the unfortunate young women that they have a chance at healthy lives. Huh. Kind of sounds like that Girl Interrupted with Winona Ryder and shit. Who else was in that movie? Winona Ryder, Whoopi Goldberg, Angelina Jolie was in that. Okay, anyway, but it wasn't that. So Young, So Bad. Star Paul Henreid. He was from Casablanca. He was Victor, right, in Casablanca. It also star Catherine McLeod. Her last credit, again, 2023 episode. I shouldn't say last. Her most recent credit was an episode of Lopez versus Lopez, which is a George Lopez sitcom. I don't know much about it. I know this is TV daughter. It's his real daughter, so that's kind of cool. Constance Marie is in it. So Constance Marie was his wife in the original George Lopez show, and she was in the TV adaptation of Dirty Dancing, which I discussed earlier this season. So that's her first and last thing. Let's talk about Rita Moreno's notable roles. There's a lot. There's a lot to dig into here. So starting in 1952, the first notable thing I saw was Singing in the Rain. She did The King and I in 1956, The Red Skeleton Hour, Father Knows Best, Zane Grey Theater. So Zane Grey was a Western author. I remember my grandmother just really liked Zane Grey. So that whenever I hear the name Zane Grey, I think of my grandmother, who was a big fan of Zane Grey's books. But they had a TV show called Zane Grey Theater. She did Playhouse 90, which was an anthology series. It was live TV. It was 90-minute plays. I'm reading about it now, actually. So I'm reading a movie, or reading a movie. I'm reading a book now called The Box, which is basically the history of TV, like literally from like radio to inventing TV, all the people competing to invent the first TV and all that. It goes into like the 1960s. It's a 600-page book about halfway through. But in the early days of TV, they talk about shows like Playhouse 90, where it was this live TV and it was actually really well written, really well directed, really well acted because it was live. And what it did, it created this whole new avenue for these Broadway actors in New York, because that's where a lot of TV was being done, was in New York. And it was like crazy good directors, John Frankenheimer, Arthur Hiller, Arthur Penn, that's Sean Penn's dad, George Roy Hill. He went on to direct a ton of shit, including... Well, hell, I think he did Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. What else? Sidney Lumet, Burgess Meredith. These were all directors that did this stuff. Check out some of the writers. Rod Serling, Tad Mosel, Reginald Rose, even Aaron Spelling. So anyway, I wanted to kind of point out how there was a small window of time in very early television where it was top-notch work. It was live. And they also say that the fact that it was live really brought out the best of the best. It weeded out the shittier actors who couldn't do a live performance. And there's all kinds of crazy stuff. You got to remember, with it being live and them not having the kind of technology that we have now, they had to do these quick changes. So what they would do when they had to do a quick change was like they'd zoom in on one character's face, right? So all the other characters kind of like scurry off the stage and go backstage. And sometimes it would get fucked up. Like, for example, if someone was playing dead, what they would do is like they had to lay there with their eyes closed, and someone would go, like maybe an AD would go and like tap their ankle, and that would cue them to, okay, get up and run off stage. Well, if something else happened to touch their ankle and they thought it was the cue, they'd get up and walk away. And it happened a lot in live TV. Like, there'd be a dead character who were like literally just stand up and walk off the set. Anyway, it's a really interesting book about the early days of television and the invention of television. It's pretty cool stuff. But back to Rita Moreno, not about me reading books about TV. Rita Moreno, she did The Magical World of Disney. She did Zorro, the TV show. She did West Side Story, 1961, and she won an Oscar for it. She did The Electric Company. I love The Electric Company. So there were 780 episodes of The Electric Company. It was basically a Sesame Street type show. I remember watching it a lot as a kid. I really loved it. There's a song that I play. So me and my older daughter play this song to annoy my wife. But I remember being a kid and watching Electric Company, and there was a song that would come on where the whole cast would come out and sing. It was called Molly Lick a Lolly. And it's a stupid song, but I'm going to play it for you now. Hold on. And I sing this to piss my wife off. Can't get enough of this. I love this. Lick a lolly. La 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 la. There's Molly. All right, I'll turn that off now. How much fun is that? It annoys the shit out of my wife. So me and my older daughter randomly will sing that or play that on our phones to piss off my wife. But that's The Electric Company. I love the show. Back to Rita Moreno. She did Trapper John M.D. She did The Love Boat, The Cosby Show, The Golden Girls, Miami Vice, B.L. Stryker, Sesame Street, Top of the Heap. I mentioned that earlier. That was a spinoff of Married with Children starring Matthew LeBlanc. How about that? Or Matt LeBlanc, not Matthew LeBlanc. The Nanny, The Larry Sanders Show. She did the 1995 movie Angus. Let's talk about Angus. That was a fun movie. I remember liking that movie. A miserable fat teenager secretly has a crush on the class beauty, ends up becoming the surprising participant to dance with her at a high school dance, meaning he's got to get his act together with the help of his best friend. What a fun movie. Charlie Talbert played Angus. I've not seen much of him since. George C. Scott was in this. He was the grandpa. Kathy Bates, who's always good in everything she does. Kevin Connolly was in this. He was from Entourage. He's a dick, and I don't like him for personal reasons. And I'm not going to get into it. I don't want to get sued, but he's not a good guy. He also directed that 2008 film Gotti, which is considered one of the worst films of all time. So fuck you, Kevin Connolly. Chris Owen was in this. He was the Shermanator from American Pie. The red-haired kid, the Shermanator. Loved him. Ariana Richards was in this. She was the little blonde girl from Jurassic Park. If you go back and watch Jurassic Park, by the way, the movie holds up, fun movie, but the kid actors in it are phenomenal. She's really good in it. She grew up though and kind of got thrown under a bus. I think I mentioned this once on the podcast too. Years ago in like the early 2000s, I guess, Wilmer Valderrama was on the Howard Stern show and decided to talk about all the women he'd slept with. And he claimed that he took Ariana Richards' virginity. So that's not cool. And if I were her dad, I'd find him and whoop his ass in the middle of the street. So I hope that happens to him one day. James Vanderbeek was in this. He was the bully, the Beak. Imagine James Vanderbeek playing a bad guy. I don't like it. Anyway, back to Rita Moreno. In 97, she has Murphy Brown. Then it's Touched by an Angel. Slums of Beverly Hills. Great movie. That was, who was in that? Oh shit. Marissa Tomei. Natasha Lyonne was in it, also in American Pie, so I brought it back. There we go. 1997 to 2003, she did 55 episodes of Oz, which I'm not really familiar with Oz, but that's neither here nor there. She did Strong Medicine. She did Law & Order, SVU. She did Law & Order Trial by Jury. Is that a thing even? I had to look that up. There's so many Law & Orders, but I had never heard of Law & Order Trial by Jury. So I looked it up. I'll read you the synopsis of it. Okay. The series showed the workings of the judicial system, beginning with the arraignment and continuing through the lawyer's process of building a case, investigating leads, and preparing witnesses and defendants for trial. Did not do well. It lasted 14 episodes. So imagine getting cast on that, because every Law & Order show seems to last like a lifetime, right? So imagine being an actor, you get cast on this, you're like, man, this is it. I've arrived. I got a TV gig now for years. Nope, only lasted 14 episodes. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. 2007, she does George Lopez, Ugly Betty, Law & Order Criminal Intent. By the way, that one lasted 10 years. I don't really know that one either, but that's more prototypical, 10 years. In 2010, she did an episode of In Plain Sight. Now, we have to talk about this. So that show starred Mary McCormick, mentioning Howard Stern again. She was in the movie Private Parts, which was Howard Stern's movie. She played Howard Stern's wife in it. And they've had a great relationship ever since. Howard Stern is very good friends with Mary McCormick. So a little bit about Howard Stern. I'm a big fan. He's got this group of people that they call the Whack Packers. It's all these weirdos who are like regulars on the show. He's kind of made them celebrities. You got like High Pitch Eric, Wendy the Slow Adult, Gary the Conqueror, Bigfoot, which is like this guy from Vermont who is like half human, half whatever. You know, so it's a cast of people like that. Fred the Elephant Boy, who actually just passed away. One of my favorites was Eric the Midget, and later on became Eric the Actor, because Howard Stern, as he's gotten older, has become a little bit more woke. So Wendy the Retard, for example, became Wendy the Slow Adult. Gary the Retard became Gary the Conqueror. Well, Eric the Midget became Eric the Actor, and every now and then Howard would get him acting roles. And the thing about Eric the Actor was he's a little person in a wheelchair. He's deformed. He's got everything is an uphill battle for him. And he's the most ungrateful little son of a bitch. It's great. He's scrappy. He's always cursing at Howard Stern, who gives him money, gives him acting jobs. He was my favorite Whack Packer. Well, again, an acting job comes in the form of Mary McCormick offering Eric the Actor an acting job on her show In Plain Sight. So again, Eric is not grateful. He's a dick. And he comes up with a list of demands. Right, here's my list of demands for you flying me out to New Mexico to do your TV show. And one of them, well, actually, there's two that were funny. One was he required a certain amount of Pepsi to be available to him because he really likes Pepsi. But also, he needed protection from werewolves. And everyone's like, wait, what? Protection from, and this is in writing, by the way, like they're reading the list. Well, apparently he Wikipedia'd New Mexico, and someone on Wikipedia had written that there were werewolves there. So Eric was very concerned and demanded protection from werewolves. So that's why he's in the whack pack. But anyway, the episode, if you ever want to watch it, In Plain Sight, it did air March 23rd, 2012. Eric passed away in 2014. Tip of 40 for him. Back to Rena Moreno. She did Grey's Anatomy, Jane the Virgin, One Day at a Time, that reboot, right? They rebooted that. She's in it. She did the 2021 Steven Spielberg version of West Side Story. And just this year, she did 80 for Brady. We got to read about that. So 80 for Brady, a group of friends made it their lifelong mission to go to the Super Bowl and meet NFL superstar Tom Brady. But here's what's cool about that. Check out the cast. Rita Moreno's in it. Jane Fonda's in it. Remember her from 9 to 5? Lily Tomlin's in it, also from 9 to 5. So it's a 9 to 5 reunion, but it's also got some other legends in it. Sally Field is in it. Harry Hamlin's in it. Sally Kirkland, Sarah Gilbert, Bob Balaban. Who else? Tom Brady is in it. So what a great fun movie. I've not seen it, but it's like a little miniature reunion for 9 to 5. Now let's shift gears. We're going to point out some interesting, quote unquote, interesting stuff. Now this is really hard because she did a lot of work. She did tons of movies and TV in the 50s and 60s. So I'm going through all this stuff. She did stuff with lots of cool posters. It's way too much for me to talk about. And honestly, there's so much to go through here. This is why it's going to be a two-part episode because I really want to dig into Rita Moreno. So I've decided just to talk about a ton of stuff with her. So pack a lunch, kiddos, and we'll get through this episode together. Okay, first up, she did an episode of 1952's China Smith. The title intrigued me. So China Smith lasted 26 episodes and ran in 1952. Here's the synopsis. Con artist and private eye China Smith works out of a bar in Singapore, roaming Asia in search of beautiful women who like his tough style and quick money. His nemesis are the friendly British inspector and the scheming empress. So, I don't know. Sounds like a fun life, right? Just chasing some money and some beautiful Asian women. I did not recognize any of the actors, though, but that is China Smith. Thought it was a cool title. Next, in 1959, she did an episode of the TV show Trackdown. I was excited that this came up. So Trackdown went from 1957 to 1959. It lasted 71 episodes. Here is the synopsis. Texas Ranger Hobie Gilman travels the Old West tracking down assorted killers, bank robbers, horse thieves, and other evildoers. Right? Pretty standard stuff for that time frame. However, Hobie Gilman was played by Robert Culp, Bob Culp. He's one of my favorites. I love Robert Culp. He is a two-time Columbo killer. How about that? He was on Columbo twice as a killer. One time as like the manager of a professional football team. It was really cool. And then one time it was like the head of a security company or something, but both great episodes. He also famously co-starred alongside Bill Cosby in the show I Spy. You know, Bill Cosby, he was the first African-American actor to win a Best Actor Emmy. So Robert Culp is kind of synonymous with that. A great show. They also reunited once on The Cosby Show years later. Robert Culp, when I was a kid, was on The Greatest American Hero. His face, to me, is like the quintessential 70s TV face. He did so many TV shows. I mean, too many to list. All of the Westerns. He did like every one of those damn Westerns. Also, classic movie, he did Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, which, by the way, became a TV show. And he was in Miss Columbo. So I don't know, I've never actually seen his episode of Miss Columbo, so I'm not sure in which capacity, but he was in Miss Columbo. But I must move on, that's Robert Culp. Back to Rita Moreno, though, because it is about her. She did a 1959 episode of The Millionaire. Now, this has a cool synopsis. The Millionaire TV show ran from 1955 to 1960, 207 episodes. In this hit 1950s TV series, a millionaire indulges himself giving away $1 million apiece to persons he has never met. Wow, I like it. Altruistic, probably a feel-good show. Okay, now we have a weird movie alert. Weird movie alert, weird movie alert. 1960, This Rebel Breed. This is a weird one, man. So let me read it for you, and I'm going to pull up the poster and talk about that. So the main actor in it, because they reference him in the synopsis, is a guy named Mark Damon. So there you go. So let me read you the synopsis. All right. Damon's in blackface as blacks take on whites who take on Hispanics in this very entertaining teenage gang war extravaganza. Teenage punks slice and dice each other, turn innocent young girls into sleazy tramps, threaten innocent citizens, get involved in interracial romance, and sell drugs to local citizens. Whew, that's a lot of trashy behavior for one movie. That is a synopsis. So the poster's a fucking mess, man. Here's the poster. So it actually is a cool look, right? I mean, it's a kind of a cool, you know, of that for that era. Her name was Wiggles, and the kids all thought she was white. With blazing impact, the screen looks squarely into the face of today's wild teenage emotions caught in the crossfire of love and hate. This rebel breed. What the fuck is that? So I made a note to myself to read the first review. So I guess I'm going to start doing that now, reading these reviews. Okay. All right. This is yet another exploitational release from Something Weird Video. This particular DVD features a double feature, this film and Murder in Mississippi. Black Rebels, also known as The Rebel Breed, is about juvenile delinquents, in particular kids who resort to racially motivated crimes. To combat this problem, the cops sent two recent police academy graduates to a local high school to pose as students. Huh, sounds like 21 Jump Street. However, the guys playing students were 27 and 23 years of age. Also, sounds like 21 Jump Street. In fact, none of these teens look close to being a teenager, blah, 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 so on and so forth. Then they mention, like, to make it worse, one of these pseudo-teens looks silly as he's supposed to play a guy who is a biracial Latino, but this effect was achieved by painting his skin. It's quite obvious. Yikes. This thing seems like a mess all around. I don't know. This rebel breed, but then was later on renamed the Black Rebels, and I think they were in blackface. I don't fucking know. Anyway, let's move on. Now, I wanted to point out a fun trend. So this was a common thing, but I saw it with Rita Moreno, so I thought I'd point it out. So I'm going to read you three credits that she did between 1960 and 1961. Then I'll circle back and read each other's synopsis. Or synopsises. I don't know. It doesn't matter. All right. She had Bourbon Street Beat, Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and Michael Shane, all in that time frame. Now I'm going to read you the synopsis of each one. Starting with Bourbon Street Beat. Let's take a look here. A former New Orleans cop partners with an Ivy League lawyer to open up a private detective agency with offices on the city's famed Bourbon Street. Okay, that's Bourbon Street Beat. Now, Richard Diamond, private detective. Okay. Richard Diamond is a suave private investigator who at first walks the mean streets of New York City, then later packs up and moves to Los Angeles, California, where he tools around in a convertible with a car phone. Wow. Early car phone. His sexy receptionist, Sam, whose face is never shown, minds the office while Diamond solves the cases. All right. Then finally, Michael Shane. Michael Shane is a private detective who solves crimes in Miami, Florida. So anyway, what I was pointing out was a lot of private detective stuff. So private detectives quickly became popular in early television. So first you had the rise of the Westerns, then you had private detectives. Cops didn't become popular till way later. There really weren't a lot of early cop shows. It was Westerns and private detectives. And I thought I would just point out like the prevalence of these private detective shows because all those credits were basically in an 18-month span for her. So anyway, thought that was fun. They all sound like fun shows to me, especially the dude who's got the sexy receptionist. All right, 1963, Rita Moreno does an episode of Burke's Law. And I just wanted to read the synopsis because this shit would never fly today. Check this synopsis out. Burke's Law, it ran from 1963, by the way, to 1966. The millionaire captain of the LAPD Homicide Division is driven to the crime scenes in his 1962 Rolls Royce by his loyal chauffeur. Can you imagine in today's day and age, like a fucking cop showing up to the crime scene with his chauffeur and a limo and he's a millionaire? They would fucking hang him in the street, man. That would not fly now. That just made me laugh. All right, back to Rita Moreno. Let's talk about the TV show Run for Your Life. So she appeared in this program. The show itself ran from 1965 to 1968. It lasted 85 episodes. Here's the synopsis. A successful lawyer is told by his doctor that he's terminally ill and will be dead in under 2 years. He decides to do all the things for which he never had time. Each episode tells of the places he goes and the people he meets, from bums riding the rails to gigolos. He becomes a man with little fear of death and everything but time. So a guy up against terminal illness, he does like the opposite of what Walter White did, right? Walter White in Breaking Bad, it's like, I'm going to die. Let me become a meth lord to make money. This guy decides to be altruistic. It starred Ben Gazzara. It also starred Nicholas Colasanto. He was the coach from Cheers in the first two seasons, right? And then Nicholas Colasanto died and was replaced by the character of Woody, played by, ironically, Woody Harrelson. So there you go. In 1971, Rita Moreno was in the movie Carnal Knowledge. Now, we got to talk about Carnal Knowledge. This is a very interesting film. Directed by Mike Nichols, starring Jack Nicholson, Candy Bergen. I call her Candy. You can call her Candace. And Margaret. And Art Garfunkel. because back then Art Garfunkel did movies. That's funny. He also became an artist for a while. I think he was a painter or something like that. Let's read the synopsis first. It's called Carnal Knowledge, chronicling the lifelong sexual development of two men who meet and become friends in college. And that's Art Garfunkel and Jack Nicholson. Now, the director is Mike Nichols, right? He is a legend. He's from Second City. There you go. His comedy partner, also from Second City, was Elaine May. So they were Nichols and May. They did a lot of comedy albums together. They won a lot of awards together. They're both legends, right? Elaine May is a legend as well. Mike Nichols went on after he separated his partnership with Elaine May. He directed some serious shit, right? He directed Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Graduate, one of my favorites, Catch-22, Carnal Knowledge, Gilda Live. So Gilda Radner, while she was on SNL in the late 70s, she also had a Broadway show called Gilda Live. He directed the movie version of that for her. Then he went and directed Heartburn, another Jack Nicholson movie, I believe with Meryl Streep. Biloxi Blues, Working Girl, Postcards from the Edge, The Birdcage, Primary Colors, Charlie Wilson's War, all kinds of stuff. He directed 17 different actors in Oscar-nominated performances, and I'm going to read them all for you. Ready? Let's go. Liz Taylor, Sandy Dennis, Richard Burton, George Segal, Dustin Hoffman, Anne Bancroft, Catherine Ross, Anne Margaret, Meryl Streep, Cher, Melanie Griffith, Sigourney Weaver, Joan Cusack, Kathy Bates, Natalie Portman, Clive Owen, and Philip Seymour Hoffman. Whew! I'm beat. That's Mike Nichols. That's legendary shit. Back to Rita Moreno, though. She was in the 1976 movie The Ritz, and I just thought the synopsis jumped out at me. Evading a mob contract on his life, a heterosexual man winds up hiding out at a homosexual bathhouse. Not a bathhouse stuff back then. I don't feel like gay people go to bathhouses anymore, but that was a thing back then. Had a really fun cast. Let me scroll through it. Jack Weston, Jerry Stiller's in this. F. Murray Abraham's in this. Treat Williams is in this. Oh my gosh. Who else? Anyone else I recognize? John Ratzenberger was in it, man. John Ratzenberger, also from Cheers, I mentioned it earlier. He was Cliff Clavin. Two fun things about John Ratzenberger is first, they didn't originally... So John Ratzenberger auditioned for a lot of roles on Cheers, and he got shot down for all of them. But it didn't stop. And one day he was driving, and it occurred to him, you know what they don't have is the know-it-all. Every bar has a know-it-all. So he goes back there, kind of cons his way back into the casting office, and he tells him, look, you guys need a bar know-it-all, a horse's ass. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, every bar's got that guy who thinks he knows everything and spitting off facts. They liked the idea, they wrote the idea, and they gave him the part. So John Ratzenberger basically created his own part in Cheers. Now, famously, it's become a thing with Pixar. He is in every single Pixar movie, John Ratzenberger. Look it up. It's a lot of fun stuff. But that is The Ritz. The next year, though, she did an episode of Lanigan's Rabbit. And I just pulled it up because it really was interesting to me. I love these TV shows I've never heard of, especially ones that seem just so kind of neat. Here's the synopsis for the TV show Lanigan's Rabbi, which, by the way, ran five episodes from 1976 to 1977. Police Chief Paul Lanigan and David Small, a rabbi in Cameron, California, are friends and both solve crimes in the local town. They also spent many evenings socializing, but the wives usually got angry when they turned to the latest crimes. So I just thought it was neat because you don't see a lot of like rabbis or Jewish people represented in TV shows. It starred Art Carney as the cop. Bruce Solomon was the rabbi. The show also featured Robert Reed. He comes up a lot in the podcast. He was the dad, of course, in The Brady Bunch. Brian Dennehy, John Astin, and Scott Columbi. But Scott Columbi, he was the, you know who he was? He was the asshole Italian kid. The caddy in Caddyshack, the asshole one. One who looks like fucking Chachi. But anyway, let's move on with Rita Moreno. In 1991, she did the movie Age Isn't Everything, and it's got a really dumb synopsis. I thought I would read it. Young man gives up his dream of becoming an astronaut to go into business and finds himself turned into a little old man. Huh? It starred Jonathan Silverman. I'm not sure about Jonathan Silverman. He kind of has had a big career and kind of not. Like, he was in the 80s. He kind of had a recurring role on Give Me a Break. In the 90s, they tried to make him work, right? He was on that... The Single Guy, which was like a want to be like Friends and Seinfeld-y 90s type show, didn't quite work. I think it was like two seasons. You see him in some movies. I don't know. It's just an interesting career, that guy. Never quite caught on. The movie also had Paul Sorvino, another guy who I'm not sure about. See, the first time I really saw Paul Sorvino was as Pauly in Goodfellas. So to me, he was like this great actor. But as you look back at his career and everything he did after Goodfellas, it's like, was he a good actor or not? I can't really tell. The movie also had Shirley Stoller. She was in The Honeymooners. I referenced her in a podcast a while back. I think in the National Lampoon, the Christmas Vacation one, where she was in a movie where like she plays a fat woman in a bikini, and it's just weird, but they kept talking about how fat she was, and it was, I just thought it was kind of rough. Kreskin is in this movie, the amazing Kreskin, like the mind reader guy. He was like a staple of daytime talk shows when I was a kid, like in the 80s. Joyce Brothers was in this. That's Dear Abby's sister. So I don't know. Weird movie. Looks stupid. Back to Rita Moreno. In 1993, she did an episode of the sitcom Hearts of Fire. And I do want to talk about this because I did not remember it. Hearts of Fire was a sitcom, ran 1992 to 1995. John Ritter and Markie Post star in this comedy about two politicos that fall in love. John Ritter and Markie Post are both gone now. So John Ritter, of course, Three's Company, which I've referenced a couple times this episode. He had a great career. Markie Post was most famous for being in Night Court, which just came back, by the way, just last night, actually, I think is when it premiered. I wasn't into it. I actually saw the first episode and I don't know, made me feel nostalgic, I guess, but the show wasn't that great. She also was Cameron Diaz's mom in There's Something About Mary. But it's just interesting that John Ritter and Markie Post are both dead. The show, though, also featured Billy Bob Thornton, which I thought was interesting, and Clark Duke. I didn't realize Clark Duke was a child actor. So Clark Duke, I think, kind of came into prominence. He was in Hot Tub Time Machine. He's like the chubby kid with glasses. He was in the last season of The Office, the chubby kid with glasses, kind of looked like Rainn Wilson. He was in a great show that got canceled, and it pissed me the fuck off. It was on Showtime, and it was called I'm Dying Up Here. It was about the stand-up comedy scene in L.A. in the 1970s. Like, talk about a perfect Fanacek show. Lasted two seasons, it got canceled, but Clark Duke was in that. But anyway, I just never knew he was a child actor. I found that interesting. I hope you find that interesting. Rita Moreno, she also did an episode of another sitcom I did not remember, Women of the House. It was a spinoff of Designing Women. I'll pull it up here. So Suzanne Sugarbaker of Designing Women rocks the U.S. Capitol when she takes over her recently deceased husband's seat in Congress. I did not know about this show. Of course, it featured Delta Burke, because she was Suzanne Sugarbaker. When I was a kid, the big thing about Delta Burke, and this sucks for her, was her weight gain. Like, that was a big tabloid thing for like a year or two, was look how heavy she's getting. Fat, fat, fat. Delta Burke, Delta Burke. I remember thinking this woman must want to kill herself with all this bullshit. But anyway, the show also featured Terry Garr, Patricia Heaton before Everybody Loves Raymond. Jonathan Banks was in this. That guy comes up a lot in my podcast. He was Mike Ehrmantraut, man. On fucking Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. One more credit for Rita Moreno. And I promise you we'll wrap this episode up. She was in the 2013 TV movie Nikki Deuce. I've never seen Nikki Deuce, but I was aware of it because I listened until it was over. I listened to Talking Sopranos, just a great podcast about The Sopranos. They went through every episode, and it was hosted by Michael Imperioli, who played Christopher Moltisanti on The Sopranos, and Stephen Schrippa, who played Bobby Bacala on The Sopranos. And Bobby, or Stephen Schrippa, rather, I think produced this movie. So I was aware of it. I'll read you the synopsis, but what I want to talk about is the cast. When sheltered suburbanite Nicholas Borelli is sent to stay with his tough Uncle Frankie in Brooklyn for the summer, he gets an urban makeover and becomes Nikki Deuce. Now check out the cast. If you're a Sopranos fan, you're going to love this. Michael Imperioli was in this. He, of course, in The Sopranos, like I said, was Chris Moltisanti. James Gandolfini was in this movie. He was Tony Soprano himself. Tony Sirico was in this movie. He was Pauly Walnuts. And Tony Sirico, by the way, just recently passed away. Stephen Schirripa was in this. He was Bobby Bacala on The Sopranos. Vincent Curatola is in this. He was, oh, shit. Oh, what was his character's name? It's going to kill me now. I can't believe Johnny Sack. John Sacramone, but they called him Johnny Sack. He was Johnny Sack on The Sopranos. I'm looking through. Is there any other Sopranos people? Not that I recognize. Not that I recognize. No, there aren't. But that's a lot of Sopranos. What a great Sopranos reunion. So that wraps up Rita Moreno. Rita versus Lily Tomlin. I'm calling it a tie. They're both legends. It's a tie. We're going to skip the awards for now because we'll do that at the end of next episode. And we go through two more characters from 9 to 5. So that wraps up 9 to 5 for now. But stay tuned because we will be back. That wraps up the episode. That was S2E10, the finale part 1. Thank you for listening. Do me a favor. If you like the show, leave a positive review. You can email me, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter, @fanacekpodcast. I'm on Facebook all the time, Real Fanacek. Show me some hate because I didn't talk about that show, Heck Ramsey, wherever the hell it was. By the way, the star of Heck Ramsey was Richard Boone. I just learned this. And he was Paladin in Have Gun Will Travel, right? Which was referenced in Stand By Me. Have Gun Will Travel reads the card of a man. A knight without armor in a savage land. If you like my singing, let me know and I'll sing more in the next episode. But I need you to do me a favor. Stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanachek.